can spill an ink.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Spilling Ink, the talk show that takes you behind the scenes in the publishing world to get inside the heads of the authors and publishers and literary agents out there. With us tonight, we have Axel Howardson. How's it going, Axel?
Good.
And we also have Jim Jackson. How's it going, man?
Good. How are you, Jason?
Excellent, excellent. I'm glad you could take a break from your busy touring schedule to join us tonight. You guys might recognize Jim from MTV playing his folk jams. And then, as always, the lovely, the radiant Katie Salitis. Hi, Katie.
Wow, what an intro. Thank you, Jason. Hi, how are you doing this week?
I'm doing pretty well, doing pretty well. How about yourself? Oh, and Bella. Don't forget Bella, the dancing cockatoo. How's it going? That's right. Whoop-de-doo, Bella. So who wants to go first? Who's our first victim, you two?
Axel, you've been doing this longer. Why don't you take it away?
Sure.
Axel, tell us a little bit about yourself, man.
Sure. I'm Axel Howerton. I'm a novelist, editor, publisher. Used to be an entertainment journalist. I spent about 10 years doing that, doing movie reviews, book reviews, music reviews. And then I kind of got burned out talking about other people creating things and then was missing creating things myself. So I got back into fiction, started with horror, kind of fluttered back towards crime. My first book came out in 2013. That was a finalist for the Arthur Ellis Award for Best First Novel, which is from the Crime Writers of Canada. My second novel came out a couple years ago. It's called Fur. They call it a modern gothic fairy tale.
Sweet.
I have a kind of a sequel to that, which actually begins a spin-off series with Taiki Books, which is a small press here in Canada. That's called Demon Days. That's the first of the Wolf and Devil series that kicks off in the next month or so. And my last book, which did come out from my own press, I know that's terrible, but is called Con Morte, and it's what we call a noir fable. I started Coffin Hop Press back in 2012, 2013. When I was doing horror, I was kind of asked to put together some kind of promotional event because there wasn't a lot of stuff for horror authors back then. Romance writers were doing blog hops. So we set up this week-long blog hop where everybody cross-promoted and really pushed, and everybody did contests every day, giveaways every day. And eventually they decided they want to do a book. So since I was the guy that put together the event, I was the guy that got to put together the book. That was called Death by Drive-In. And after that, I kind of had the framework set up to have a publishing company. And it wasn't really doing anything with it. So when ideas would come along, some friends and I decided we wanted to do a collection of weird Westerns. So we did a book called Tall Tales of the Weird West. Whoop-de-doo indeed. And then we had a collection of Alberta-based crime writers writing Alberta-based crime stories, which is where I live in Canada here. Called AB Negative. We put out a collection just this last November. It's a Weird Winter Wonderland, which is weird Christmas stories. And somewhere along the way, I picked myself up a partner and we decided to start ramping things up and going from just me kind of doing things when I had the time and felt like getting into a project that I really just wanted to do because I liked it. And we've kind of ramped things up to become an actual serious press, and since then we've picked up 6-7 books, and we would have put out 4 this last fall, 3 more in April. I think we have 4 for the summer, 3 more for next November. We've launched a line of dark crime novellas called Noirvellas, which is the book I'd alluded to previously. I wrote that one just to kind of kick off the line. We've had 1 more book in that series already, 2 more coming in April. We do basically what Coffin Hop Press does is weird fiction and dark crime fiction.
Okay.
And that's that's me in the nutshell, I guess.
Fantastic. Well, and I mentioned before we were on air that I absolutely love your logo. It's so my style. It actually reminds me of I have my own little raven with my Edgar Allan Poe tattoo. And so as soon as
I got one of those too.
Yes, nice. See, I knew I felt that connection.
Now so, even I got the shirt on. I got all the swag.
Hell yeah! Well, do you have shirts for sale? Because I would totally rock a Coffin Hop shirt.
We do. If you go on our website, coffinhop.com, there's a shop there. You can go in. T-shirts and stuff are all through Cafe Press, but, you know.
Okay.
Still good stuff.
Fantastic. Well, I want to get back with you and with Coffin Hop because there's a lot more I want to know, but I'd like to let Jim introduce himself. Jim, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Wow, I should have gone first. That's a hard story to come up with something to counter it. So,
you know, I know it's hard to follow Axel there, but if you put it into a song, like you played the guitar, you're giving us your bio.
He is good.
I didn't have nearly the direct line. It was always this idea that, you know, I was kind of okay with words and wanted to do something with that, but I never knew what it was. It was actually songwriting for a little while back in the 19. I'm not going to say when, but.
Well, you don't look old on this screen, but maybe it's the resolution. Maybe I just can't see any wrinkles.
It must be. It must be. So, yeah. So I kicked around. I did some things. I traveled the world. I lived 4 years in mainland China and one in Mexico. And there are some books coming out about that later in 2019. So, and then worked a little bit as a journalist. I had an op-ed piece for a weekly op-ed piece for a Chinese newspaper, which was fantastic and was 400 words a week. So learned that the hardest part is getting it down, is getting down to the focus when you got to get an idea out in 400 words. And then I've been a teacher. I've been a public speaking instructor most recently. And that's when the idea for my first book came out. I was teaching mostly accountants and other kind of business types, public speaking. And I'd always say, you know, if you really want to hook your audience, start with a story. Everyone loves that. We as human beings love to hear stories. Every one of them, 99% of them, start with this personal story. And they'd nod and say, yeah, that's true, that's true. And then they'd still come up and say, there are many psychological and physical benefits to long distance running. And then, you know, come down and say, well, hey, what happened to the story idea? And it kind of dawned on me that not everyone knows how to take a topic, especially a technical one, and turn it into a story. So that's where my first book, How to Tell a Really Good Story About Absolutely Anything in 4 Easy Steps, came from. That you can take any kind of technical topic, make it into a story just by following these basic principles of storytelling. And so from there, I thought, well, this was a great experience. I'm back into writing again. And so I thought, I'm going to do NaNoWriMo. I'm going to do National Novel Writing Month in 2016. So I wrote a novel, and that was my first novel that came out just this past fall.
And what was the name of that novel?
Stones in My Pathway. And it actually even relates back to my old blues playing days when I was a teenager and in my 20s. It's based on around the kind of Robert Johnson myth of meeting the devil at the crossroads and making a deal.
I like it.
I call it a novel. Lots of blues imagery, things like that. Sorry, Katie, go ahead.
Tell me again what the name of your other book was.
How to Tell a Really Good Story About Absolutely Anything in 4 Easy Steps.
I'm totally picking that up after the show because I've actually got one of my first talks I'll be giving next month.
Oh, is that right? Fantastic.
and not that I'm nervous, but I'm totally nervous about it.
Well, and that's good. Like I tell my public speaking students, you want to be nervous. You want to be a little bit nervous, not the, you know, the knee shaking, hand sweating, wanting to crawl under the desk and die kind of nervous. But a little bit of nerves helps you do a good job, and it shows that you want to do a good job.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. Keeps you sharp in a way.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely.
Jim, do you and Axel know each other?
We do.
How did you guys get connected? How are you? How do you know?
Well, that's actually an interesting story, because we could have known each other like in the early 90s and may have even crossed paths.
We may well have met. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Yeah. We have a really good friend in common, actually, and Axel, until recently, with it was an open stage for writers. and we were, no, it wasn't even that. It was the Bloody Offensive event, wasn't it?
Yes, where I read with no pants. I think,
yes, it was the Bloody Offensive event. Local bookstore hosted this thing. Yeah, the events organizer said to me once, like, have you ever just wanted to read stuff at an open mic, an open stage or something, but you know, there are young people around, there are kids around, and so you kind of hold back and not read the best stuff because it might be a little racy. And I was like, yeah, every time. So she decided to organize this adults-only reading with six readers. Some were funny, some were kind of dark, but all of them had some kind of element of mild offensiveness to them. And so we did that Valentine's Day last year.
What an excellent event.
Oh, it was fantastic. We had a great time. Axel came out without pants, actually.
He came out wet?
With no pants. I came out in my dress socks, my dress shoes, smoking jacket, fez, no pants.
And read my
little story about a hot tub threesome, a sauna threesome.
This is an event that will never ever take place in Holland, Michigan.
Well, we're doing one here again next month.
Yeah,
in Alberta.
Yeah, Valentine's Day this year. All women, yep. Writers this time. Coffin Hop is sponsoring.
That's fantastic. Now let's chat real quick about Coffin Hop again. So now, Jim, I know you've already been on air with another show today talking all about this, but you went from a novelist to opening up a small press. And now you actually are taking on other authors. So what kind of, are you publishing full length novels, or are you publishing more collections? Because I know you mentioned a couple collections.
Oh, that was me.
Oh, I'm sorry. I said Jim, I meant Axel. I'm sorry, guys.
Right. No, we are initially, we do the anthologies because we like doing the anthologies. They're fun. We get to work with a bunch of people that we really admire or discover new people that we get excited about. But we have, once we started doing the novella line, we started to consider taking on longer works. And one of the first ones that we're publishing in April is actually that organizer that did the Bloody Offensive event, Sarah L. Johnson. And we're publishing her epic post-apocalypse. I don't even know how to describe it. It's kind of post-apocalypse, not quite sci-fi. It's got a lot of really interesting religious undertones, but it's definitely kind of borderline horror. And we're publishing that in April. It's called Infractus, and it's amazing and huge, and just the first part of her big saga that she's working on. And actually, it's a funny story. Her first book, someone I had worked with years ago at Dark Moon Digest when I was first getting back into horror, had started a press in the States. And she sent me an email. Her name's Jennifer Word. She sent me an email and said, oh, I've got this Canadian author I want you to check out. And if you like this book, maybe you can give us a blurb. So I read the book, and it was amazing short stories. Really, you know, kind of transgressive stuff, and again, a lot of religious undertones. And so I gladly sent her a blurb and went on about how great this book was. And then I had gone to the bookstore that we're talking about, and the book was there. And somebody said, oh, yeah, that's Sarah's book. And I was like, okay, Sarah, you know, I knew the author's name was Sarah. Turns out it's Sarah that works at the bookstore that I talked to a dozen times and helped me do my events. And I had no idea. I'd blurbed her book. I'd read her book and thought it was amazing. And I, you know, talked to her a dozen times and had no idea that was the same Sarah Johnson.
So that's kind of cool though. Because you were impressed by her work and you didn't even make the connection that you knew her. So that's a neat thing. That's cool.
Yeah. And we've started working on single author collections. So we have, a collection of crime stories from a really great Canadian crime author, Therese Greenwood, that we're putting out in the summer. We're trying to, Coffin Hop, as Jim mentioned, we're sponsoring the Bloody Offensive this year, which is all women readers. We're going to host it with Jim. We decided that we wanted to really get behind the year of publishing women. So Coffin Hop has kind of consciously made a real effort to seek out female authors to put out this year. We do have one of our novellas that comes out in April is written by a guy from the States, but I think pretty much all the rest of our books outside of the anthologies are all female written books this year.
And that's pretty cool.
We've always kind of done that. Most of our anthologies are full of women, aside from the Weird West, because I just didn't get any stories from women. Apparently they didn't want to write weird westerns, but aside from that, we try to make a point of being really inclusive, not just because it's progressive or it's politically correct, but just because I think it's important that everybody has a voice and everybody is represented, and the more voices we can kind of bring to the fore and put out there, the richer our catalog's going to be, and the richer the world will be for hearing all these different voices. So it was really important to us, and we really kind of chased that. And we've got some great stuff coming next year.
Now, how does Coffin Hop go about seeking out readers? Do you put out calls for submissions? Do you have specific anthology requests? How do you reach out and let readers or let authors know that you're ready for them?
Well, if you go on our website, there is a submission heading on the top menu. It does list all of our planned anthologies going into 2019, and it has a window listed there for when we're going to accept submissions, so that, you know, even if it's an anthology that's a year and a half away from taking submissions, you know, people can be working on those now and then send them in when the submission window's open. And another thing that we try to do is most of my anthologies up until now have been basically by invitation. And, you know, because I had been active in these different writing communities, I knew certain people and they knew people, and we would kind of just network and find people that we liked and that we respected and wanted to have in our books. So for instance, in the Weird West book, we've got Robert E. Vardman, who's like a bloody legend. He's been writing for 30, 40 years. He used to write Star Trek tie-ins and had umpteen series of sci-fi novels that came out in the 80s. C. Courtney Joyner, who was mostly known for writing B-movies in the 80s and 90s, wrote Puppet Master. We managed to get those guys in our Western book just because we went after them. So what we try to do is do invitational for like 8 out of 10 or 12 stories. And then we take open submissions for those other 4 slots, so that not only do we get to work with writers that we really admire and respect and want to work with and want to see more of their work out there, but we also are leaving some spots to be able to promote newer writers and to new voices. And so there's not a, you know, it cuts down how many spots are available for new writers, but it also makes it more likely that if we take your story and you're a newer writer, you're going to be in a book with, you know, pretty reputable, respectable names.
That's excellent. And I really enjoy writing shorter fiction for anthologies. I've been working with a horror anthology that's a monthly magazine type thing, and it's called Tales from the Canyons of the Damned. And mm-hmm. I try submitting to them as often as I can, just because it's a fun group of guys. It's always a bunch of weird out there stories, and it's a really good time to be a part of it. But yeah, so I'm actually trying to put together a collection of my own short, wacky, weird fiction, hopefully over this next year. And I've been torn between going self-publishing it or attempting to find a press that wanted to take it on, which is tough because it's all short stories. And for some reason, people like to buy single short stories, but I haven't found a whole lot of people interested in buying a collection. So it's interesting to hear that you're delving a little bit into that.
It takes a special kind of muscle to write short stories too. I mean, a lot of us novel writers, you know, we can write the big, long 80 to 100,000 word stories and really stretch it out. But to condense it down into bite-sized pieces, I mean, it's a skill you really have to hone. And I think, Jason, you're very good at that. I remember the tattoo piece that you let me see.
Oh, yeah. That was a lot of fun.
I really enjoyed that. And that was very short. That was, what, 5,000 words?
Yeah, somewhere around there. Yeah. I have a tough time getting under 10,000 words. I feel like 10 to 20,000 words is a really great place for me, but people aren't really calling that short fiction. So getting it down to that 5,000 mark is a challenge for sure. And I end up cutting a lot more than I want to cut out of stuff. But yeah, it's fun, you know, and they sell it, you know, it's easy to sell them to people, especially if you're already in that niche, so to speak. And so yeah, I like that a lot. And so Axel, how did you come up with your badass logo here? Did you have a designer make that, or did you do that yourself?
No, actually it was the tattoo.
Okay.
I'd gotten a tattoo years and years ago. I got a Vonnegut asterisk, you know, in some of Kurt Vonnegut's books, he would do these little doodles and they would actually put them in the book. And one of them was this little asterisk. And he used to draw that on people's books when he would sign books and stuff. And it's kind of a little known, not little known, but mainstream, not really well known, that what he was really drawing was, you know, a sphincter. And so in my younger days, being rebellious, and when Jim was in the bluesy folk scene, I was busy over in the punk clubs. You know, it was a badass thing when you were 20, but when you're pushing 30 something and you have kids and people are asking, oh, what's your tattoo? And you kind of, and you start thinking about, well, you know, I got a butthole on my forearm here. So I went to get it covered up, and my friend, an amazing artist, Chris Dow, who does most of my stuff, and he's done artwork for us and hopefully is doing more. He came up with just this beautiful raven on a skull, which is, you know, I said, maybe we can just cover it up with a big Poe homage. And he came up with this great kind of Day of the Dead sugar skull with the raven on top. And so it was right around the same time I was starting the Coffin Hop stuff. And so I just kind of found some images that came really close to that, but were nice and clean, and just fused it together, and it turned out great right out of the gate. So
it's just very,
kept that one.
It's very eye-catching. I mean, immediately I see that, I was like, oh, that looks badass. I love it. So that's well done with that. Well done. So, Jim, tell us about your newer novel.
Right. So Stones of My Past Way, a novel in blues. So it comes from the idea that what if you had a chance, if the devil offered you a chance to undo a past decision, right, that took you to where you are, just to see how your life would have been different, right? No, I can't think of the word. You don't need to keep living that other life, but just to see how it would have been. Would you take that? Would you make a deal with the devil to see how your life could have been different? And that's what my character, Wood Sweeney, comes across. He's a normal guy. He fights with his wife. He worries about his teenage daughter. She's brought home by the police for public drinking, and then storms out of the house. He goes out to look for her and finds the devil instead at this crossroads. So, and you know, he thinks he's a crazy guy. What's the harm? Sure, show me what my life could have been. And he finds out, and now he needs to escape the hellhounds that are after him, trying to turn him into one of them, and get out of this devil deal, or maybe slay the devil himself, whichever is gonna work.
Well, sounds fascinating. Now, where did the concept come from? Did it come out of the blue to you, or does it? Do you have some kind of long history with it?
Well, I fell in love with the blues when I was like 15, 16, and loved that Robert Johnson idea of, you go to the crossroads, the devil shows up, says, hey, I can do something for you that will just make you superhuman, right? In the Johnson myth, he becomes fantastic, the best human blues player, and all it's going to cost you is your soul. It's a tempting idea, and I've always wanted to do something with it. I was at this this little crappy Italian restaurant in the parking lot of a mall in San Diego once, about 7-8 years ago, and they had this mural, this kind of bluesy mural of trains and hounds after people and people screaming with blue skin. Weirdest thing in this suburban mall parking lot restaurant, but I really want to write something about that. So when NaNoWriMo 2016 came up and I signed up for that, I'm taking that idea and seeing where that leads. And it led to Stones in My Pathway.
I love how you can find inspiration just about anywhere out there. And I almost want to see, do you have a picture of that mural somewhere?
You know what? I wish I did. I'll actually be in San Diego next week. I'm going to see if that restaurant still exists and if they still have that mural, because that's a really good idea. I love that.
I mean, that just, it sounds insane, but I love how it was turned into something. It lit that creative fire within you to write this story, and it makes Absolutely. For a great story to tell too.
Yeah. And that's, I'm always on the lookout for great stories.
So now what's down the line for you for this book release? Are you planning anything big? How are you promoting it? What's your plan?
This book is out now. It came out November 1st. We did a big Day of the Dead party here, because it has those kind of death themes through it, and at the very end has a little Mexican connection from my time in Central Mexico. So we launched that. It did great. It topped the bestseller list locally here. So I'm really happy with all of that. Down the line.
I was just going to say, we always ask our authors how they go about promotion, because everybody kind of has a different plan to it.
For this now, promotion-wise, is I'm doing the musical angle. So at the launch, I brought the guitar, and when I was doing readings, just kind of noodled around on some blues underneath, and it went over really well. People said they really liked it. So
give us an example. Play us a few measures.
Oh, I don't know. You got actual people watching, you know.
Just well, imagine them in their underwear. It's fine.
don't imagine me in my underwear.
You know, that's funny, because that is the single most repeated public speaking advice. Picture people in naked or picture people in their underwear. I always tell my students, don't do that. No, nobody does that. I'm not doing that to you now. Who thought a room of naked people makes you less nervous?
Well, it's that whole, you know, the dream of you being on stage naked in front of, you know, people, or showing up to school naked. It's flipping that fear around, I think, is where that comes from.
Absolutely. It reverses that. I don't have something I can read at the same time. See if the book will stay open while I do this. A couple paragraphs here. See if I still got the chops.
Yeah.
When the devil came to me at a lonely crossroads in the December pre-dawn and offered me a deal, I shouldn't have listened to that damn tickle in the back of my brain that shouted, jump. There we go. There's the first paragraph.
You are fucking badass. I love it. That is fantastic, man. Oh man, yes, yeah. That would be a great way to win over a little crowd, get yourself going there.
Absolutely, yeah.
Well, you have to be gimmicky in this industry, because everybody's peddling their books. If you find a way to stand out in some way, shape, or form, then you know you've grabbed that reader's attention for a few minutes.
Yeah, absolutely. If I had any advice about that kind of thing, try it in front of an audience first. I didn't. I practiced a couple times in my basement, but it's hard to read and play guitar at the same time. I didn't expect it to be quite that difficult.
Now,
you pulled it off well.
Thanks, Axel.
How do you publish your work, Jim? Are you self-published, or do you use a publisher? How does that work for you?
Yeah, I publish through my publishing company, Kouros Publications, and I've looked at different options: traditional publishing, self-publishing, the hybrid. I knew for my first book, How to Tell a Really Good Story About Absolutely Anything in 4 Easy Steps, I knew that would be self-published because I already had the audience. It was the people I reached through the public speaking classes. So I knew that would be self-published, and I just had such a great time with it and such a great response that when it came to the novel, I said, I want this to happen again. So I may not always go that route, but right now the technology's there. The frameworks are there. So if you've got enough of a platform, I really think it's the way to go. I'm a huge proponent of self-publishing, despite the stigma that it still kind of has.
It's losing a lot of that stigma. You're finding a lot of self-published authors are actually bragging about how much money they're making, how easy it is for them to get their books out, and how much they love the control that they have over being able to publish their own work. Now, absolutely. As far as I'm concerned, I think the hybrid model is absolutely perfect. You can go any way you want. You can try for traditional, you can try for small press, you can do it yourself. You have so many options out there that you can find what fits with your book and your style as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
that's definitely what
I really think that in the future, self-published authors are, people are going to see self-published authors like they see those little hole in the wall startup restaurants, you know, no, it's not fancy, but wow, it's good food.
Yeah, you almost find that the hole in the walls try a little harder. Their food is usually a little bit better too.
Yeah.
I like that way of looking at it, Jim. That's nice. So now what do you think about that, Axel?
My first novel was published by a press in the States called Evolve Publishing.
Oh, no kidding. Okay.
Yep, that's that book's called Hot Sinatra. That's the one that was the finalist for the Prime Writers of Canada Award. All of my novels, aside from the one that we published to kick off the Noirvelas line, have all been with small presses. And I did work with Titan Books when I was doing entertainment journalism, and we were setting something up there. It kind of fell apart, but I do have a little bit of experience working in that, you know, Big Five kind of milieu. And I definitely, I don't know how much I'd chase after a big contract. It's nice to have that kind of backing if they're going to give you that backing. It's nice to have that push that they can give you for promotion and publicity. You know, small presses I find are always much better about really showing faith in you and sharing the proceeds. You get paid a higher percentage with the small presses. And then the self-publishing stuff, the stuff that I've done as a self-publisher, aside from Coffin Hop stuff, is you know, I've taken some stories and put out some little like chapbook collections of my own stuff that was already published, short stories and things like that. But yeah, I absolutely vote for the hybrid model, because you know I'm too busy already most of the time to really have time to write without having to worry about doing everything to put out these other books. Exactly. And it feels better to me to keep them separate so that it's not coming across as a vanity press. The Coffin Hop Press isn't just, oh, hey, we just put out our own books and here's another one of my books and another one of my stories and another one of my books. So I'm really happy that we're expanding where we can help other people, and just want to kind of keep myself just behind the scenes for most of the stuff. And then focus on my own writing career when I can around my Coffin Hop schedule, really.
Okay. And you know, it's funny, I actually just signed on with Evolve Publishing a few months ago. So I'm doing a couple thriller novels with them, which has been a new experience because I haven't worked with a small press before. So so that'll be interesting. I'm hopeful that it goes really well. It seems to me that it's working with at least with Evolved, it seems a lot like self-publishing, but with a team behind you to kind of help you and guide you and provide you with some resources. So yeah, I've liked it so far. Hopefully we'll see some good sales on the books in the future. But
yeah, for sure. Good luck.
Awesome.
That's always the point that I worry about when you choose which path you're going to go. With the self-publishing, obviously you're footing all of the money for it and all of the marketing and reaping 100% of the profits. When you go with the small press publisher, they're obviously funding, you know, the editing, the cover, things like that. So you're going to get less in royalties, but does it even out at the end? Are you getting as much as you would have gotten if you had self-published, or are you actually doing better because the small press publisher has a better marketing angle or a, you know, an actual team who's marketing, so your books are getting wider reach?
Well, you know, and with Evolved, and I don't think I can give you really specifics because I know they're tricky about their privacy. They want their privacy, but they have several different models for authors where you can go with a completely traditional route where they're paying for everything up front. However, you're going to get much less in the way of royalties, or you can go with a hybridized model where you're actually helping with the cost of editing and cover design and things like that. However, you get a much higher royalty. And that's actually what I elected to do, was to kind of go in with them on the cost of certain things so that I could get that higher royalty in the end, because I'm hoping that, you know, hey, we'll get big sales on these books and that'll pay off in the long run. But yeah, so it's kind of, you've got to make some big decisions at the start of it. That's for sure.
I'm eagerly following your path with this new publisher, Jason, as I want to see what happens, because, you know, I'm on the querying path right now with my current novel set, and it may or may not make it to agent phase, and I may decide to go small press next, or I may decide to self-publish. So I'm kind of watching what's going on with you as I'm going through the process myself.
Well, for sure.
I was just going to say, they have kind of an interesting model. There aren't really a lot of small presses that work the way that Evolve does. I know all the other presses I've worked with and the way that we work, we do more or less just take care of the editing and the covers and everything else. That's all just up front. The difference is we don't pay advances or anything. So we just, you know, we put out the book, you provide the material, we package it up, and then, you know, we split the royalties. And I mean, we even go so far as to say, you know, we give 50% of the net profits as royalties, just because we want to show authors that we're really supporting them. Still don't have a huge budget for promotions or anything. We have a publicist. We actually share a publicist with Jim. That's another way I know Jim. And, you know, it's small to start, but the idea is just that, you know, we can put more faith behind it and more attention on these individual books than a bigger publisher would, you know, help people that maybe don't have the mechanisms in place to be able to self-publish right away.
And a lot of what comes down to is, after the book is out, what happens with it. That marketing and publicity really make the most effect on the book at the end. I mean, yes, obviously it's got to be edited. It's got to have a decent cover. It's got to have a good write-up on the back. But beyond that, once it's out there in the marketplace, it's got to have some push for people to see it, because the market is flooded.
Yeah, I was reading, I think recently, there are now more books than there are readers. And that's not the model that leads to giant successes.
Yeah.
Remember seeing something, oh, this was from a blogger like 15 years ago or something. In the future, everyone will be famous for 15 people.
Interesting. That's an interesting
That's probably not far off.
I haven't hit my 15 yet.
Yeah. It's funny. We ran into someone, or someone came to drop off a kid at her house that was hanging out, and she was like, you know, you're Jason, right? Jason Lavelle. I was like, yeah. She was like, I was at some lady's house, and it was another town a couple cities away, and she was like, I saw one of your books on her shelf. I was like, that's awesome. And nice. We were talking about how I'm famous in very small circles. And I was like, that's okay, you know. All I want to see is my book on somebody's shelf now and again. I'm perfectly happy with that. So,
and really, that's the bottom line. When you hear that somebody, through somebody else, has seen your book, you know, out in the wild, it makes you kind of feel warm and fuzzy. You've reached that far with your words.
Yeah, for sure, man, for sure.
So now, working as a small press, that's a lot of risk that you're taking on. You know, we talked about the editing, the cover art, the publicity. That's a lot of money that you have to funnel into a project. So you really have to believe in that project to take it on. How many books did you say that you do roughly every year, or that your company is able to take on right now every year?
Well, what we try to do is we have three launch windows in the spring, the summer, and the fall. And we try to do 2 to 3 titles in each of those launch windows. Usually the idea, the plan right now, is for us to do at most 2 anthologies in a year, probably more likely to continue to be 1. This year, somehow we've got 3 already. And then with the Noirvellas, same thing, you know, just trying spacing them out so that hopefully each launch window we have a single author book, an anthology, and or another Noirvella, or, you know, some other project. We're actually looking at doing graphic novels now. We have somebody that we've worked with before that does a comic book here in Calgary that's it's called Futility. and they're on their, they're about to do their sixth issue, and they wanted to do kind of a an extended triple issue for the sixth issue, which is a standalone story. So they were asking us about doing promotion and publicity and things like that. So they're going to basically complete the project and then bring it to us, and we're going to pay for production, distribution, and all that stuff, and see how that goes. And hopefully if that goes well, then we can keep doing those as well. Maybe do one of those a year, one anthology, something like that. And like I say, it's the things that we want to see that we're not seeing out there.
Now, are you pushing the publishing through someone like Lightning Source, or do you have a local printer that you guys use to create your books?
For the most part, we use print on demand. We use, you know, CreateSpace and Ingram Spark, same as everybody else. So really, you know, in the end, we're kind of just a self-publisher that publishes other people's books.
Are you able to get...
Because we use all the same systems.
Are you able to get into... In Canada, it's Chapters, right?
Yep.
Are you able to get your books stocked or able to get your authors in for signings through them?
Yeah, we've had a lot of success in the past doing that. I've done a lot of events at the Chapters here in Calgary. Our publicist has a good relationship with them, so he's been setting stuff up for us. Getting a wide distribution deal is kind of hard, as I'm sure it is in the States, to have them carry it nationwide. But I mean, the books are still available through their stores. You just have to, if they don't have it on the shelf, you have to go and ask, or you have to order at their kiosk kind of thing. But the books will be available everywhere. And the independent bookstores in Alberta are really supportive. And they've given us a lot of help, especially Owl's Nest here in Calgary, which is where we do all of our events for the most part. Really, we have been looking for a printer that we'd be able to do print runs, that we'd be able to supply as a distributor ourselves. But doing it in North America is kind of, you know, prohibitively expensive. And for us up here, trying to get books from Ingram or from CreateSpace, you know, we have to pay exchange, we have to pay brokerage, and it ends up usually taking our cost per book from like $3 list price on CreateSpace to, you know, $8 or $9 Canadian. And then the bookstores have 60% consignment rates and things like that. So we're looking at some cheaper alternatives. That was one of the things that led us to the comic book, their graphic novel idea, because they had a distributor overseas that they use that is a lot cheaper, requires buying thousands of books, but it's way cheaper. And if we can do something like that and bring our costs back down to where it's $2 or $3 a copy, then, you know, that works out great for us, as long as we can actually move those copies. And we've done really well at comic conventions and entertainment conventions, going to the book conventions. We have a big one here in Calgary that we do a lot to support and promote stuff, and they help us back in return. So it's nice to have a supportive community around us. And now it's just a question of kind of expanding that.
Yeah. The question about, being able to get books into stores is something I think a lot of people don't think about, whether they're going the indie press or they're doing the self-publishing. And that's using, you know, either Ingram or CreateSpace, or Ingram and Lightning are basically the same company, two sides of the same company, is that getting into the bookstores takes a lot of work. And that if your books don't meet certain requirements, the bookstores won't let you in there on a, they'll buy it and they'll shelve it basis. You almost have to bring it in on consignment. And you bring up a good point. You know, the consignment is, you know, the 60%, and you don't get 100% of your proceeds when you do that. Yeah. And that's something that authors do need to be aware of, you know, no matter if they go indie or small press.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if we bring books up here and they cost us $9 a piece, by the time we take it into a Chapters and put it on consignment and they take their 60%, we're basically making, you know, less than a dollar profit, if that, on these books that we bring up from the States. So it's not really even worth it. But at the same time, honestly, for the most part, for most authors, it's not worth it to try and shove your books into a national chain bookstore, because they're, even if you got them to take the books, they're not really going to give you the same kind of push that Big Five books are going to get, because the Big Five companies, they buy up the end caps and the front displays in the stores, and all of that stuff is set already, and your book's never going to be on that end cap, and it's never going to be in the front of the store unless you get lucky and somebody that works in the store puts you on, you know, the staff pick shelf. So for stores that you're not personally going to be at and be able to build a relationship with, it's almost not worth it until you get to that kind of mid-level, almost upper echelon, where people widely know you by name and know your books by name. You know, before that, to still have them available where people can go in and order that book in a bookstore, to me, is kind of the next best thing. And you can get that just by putting them through Ingram's. There's, you know, there's drawbacks to that stuff too, that people don't usually think about either, that, you know, you have to make it returnable. You have to give them discounts still. There's a lot of little ins and outs to that stuff that, you know, kind of makes and breaks people all the time.
Yeah. So there's a lot of secrets to the industry that people don't quite know, and they jump in feet first and go, oh crap. Okay, hold on.
So what are you working on right now, Axel? Do you have a book that you're writing at the moment?
Like I said, my urban fantasy series, with Tyke Books, it's called, Wolf and Devil. Spins off from my previous gothic, modern gothic fairy tale. I wrote a book a few years ago. Tyke has kind of another division where they package ebooks for box sets. And they had been short a couple of books, and I'd been kind of working on something. And so they said, well, if you can have it done in 6 weeks and it has something to do with, you know, supernatural elements, we can, you know, see if it's any good and we'll use it. And so I finished cranking out this basically werewolf book, but it kind of marries noir crime to urban fantasy, and has a lot of family dysfunction in it. and they really liked it. So they took it, they put it in the box set. The box set did really well. And then they wanted me to kind of do a pass on it and expand it a little bit to make it, you know, a little more novel size. So we fleshed that out a little bit, and they published that on its own, and again did really well. They really liked it, and there was a couple of characters in there that everybody just kept going on and on about and wanted more of these characters. So I wrote a little epilogue in the first book where these two characters meet and get together. One is basically a kind of a Sherlock level genius drug dealer, and the other one is a werewolf stripper, and they're both just really exactly. And they're both really just kind of damaged, sensitive people trying to hide the fact that they're sensitive. And they get, so they wanted me to do a new book, and I wrote the new book, and then they liked that so much they wanted to expand that into a series. So I reworked that for that next book, which should be coming out in the next couple months. And then now I've got a deal with them for another three or four books to finish that series off. And it's kind of expanded into a whole secret societies, occult, kind of world changing thing with gods and demons and, you know, all kinds of monsters, vampires, werewolves, ex-professional wrestlers, all over the map. So that book, the first of the Wolf and Devil series, is Demon Days. That should be out in the next couple months. And then I've got another three or four books planned after that that I got to start working on.
Fantastic. Well, what about you, Jim? What are you writing right now?
Right now, I'm doing a little... Actually, I took a page from Axel's work and the good people at Coffin Hop and tried to play around with the noir theme. So always wanted to write something set in my favorite city in the world, Hong Kong. So I'm doing this kind of fantasy noir set in Hong Kong, series of little short novels based on like 60s pulp kind of things. There's that coming out in September. I'm co-writing a novel with a friend of mine, and I'll let you know how that goes after the process is done. But about some of our misadventures in China when we were both living there, called Dispatches from an Accidental Sex Tourist. And that's...
Wow.
That should be out early in 2019.
Okay, so wait, now, what were you doing in China? What?
Clearly he was a sex tourist.
No, it's
accidental.
It's heavily fictionalized. It is. He lives in San Diego now. I was down there around this time last year, and we were sitting out by his pool and saying, we should write something about China. Like, what are we going to write about China? and said, what if we did this? And then we just kind of spun it into the farthest you could possibly go, right? So it's a fun book. It's a little bit sexy, a little bit funny, you know. I'm really excited about that one.
Okay, what now, do you have a proposed release date yet, or is it still too early in the process for that?
It'll be not an actual date, but sometime around Chinese New Year 2019, which if it was the year of the cock or something, that would just be beautiful.
Wasn't that last year?
Yes, it was.
Okay. All right. You're going to hear the dog this year, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that would have been just perfect timing.
Oh, yeah. Couldn't have been better. But I think we're going into pig again. I could be wrong, but for 19.
All depends on how you spin it then.
That's true. That's true. We were pretty piggish in our day, so.
Now, let me ask you this, because you guys both use Mickey as your publicist. How did you two individually find him?
You want to take that, Alex? Take that first?
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, Mickey kind of, I'm not sure if he started in Calgary or not, but he'd kind of been making the rounds with writers in town, and he'd approached me a couple of times at the writers' convention that we have here, and just, you know, said he just wanted to talk about doing some publicity and stuff, and he'd wanted to he'd professed interest in working with me and kind of missed the windows on my previous novels of my own stuff. But then once I started with my partner Rob expanding Coffin Hop, we said, well, why don't we just, you know, give him a chance, see what he can do with the Coffin Hop stuff. And he's been lining up stuff left and right for us, so I actually asked him to pick up my personal stuff as well. I think Jim had actually signed with him before we did. And like Jim said, I didn't really know Jim personally that I remember. I'm kind of punch drunk, but I think he was with Jimmy before, with Mickey before we had signed on with him. But yeah, it's kind of everybody in our area that's notable is kind of signed with Mickey now. He's kind of the one game in town at the moment.
Yeah, and if I did sign before you and Coffin Hop, it was like minutes. It was maybe days. Right. I'd thought about it for a long time. I like, cause, you know, I like doing my own publicity work. That's part of what I do. So I was reluctant. Best decision I've ever made as a writer. I would absolutely recommend, if you have somebody as a publicist that you can trust, who knows what they're doing, absolutely go with that.
I have to agree to that. You need somebody in your corner who can reach out to other people and line up events and help you spread the word about your book, because most of us as authors, we're spending a lot of time behind the screen writing, getting those books finished, meeting deadlines, editing, revising. By the time we all get to the publicity phase of our book, a lot of us are burned out. A lot of us don't know what to do, how to do it, the best methods to do it. And we waste a lot of time, energy, and sometimes money doing it incorrectly.
Yeah, would never go back now. Love having someone who can make those calls and set things up so that I don't have to. I mean, I can sit behind the screen and do the writing when it's time for that.
The introverted side of me absolutely loves having somebody else do the talking.
Oh yes.
How about you, Jason? The publishing company you're working with, you said they had a marketing team. Are you going to be working with them directly on that, or is that part of your package?
Yep. You kind of work with them on everything, every step of the way. Thankfully, they design the ads and things like that for Amazon and Facebook, because I have failed miserably trying to do that kind of stuff. So I don't want anything to do with it. I am so happy to have someone else take the reins on that for me. And I need to get a good personal publicist just to work on kind of anything and everything and give me advice on things, because, you know, that's a part of the business that I don't know. And I don't feel like I want to split my attention so much to devote the amount of time it would take to learn that. You know, I just want to write and I want to improve as an author and produce good books that people are going to want to read. And unfortunately, as an indie author, we're saddled with doing all of that. So I think any help that we can get would be fantastic. Whether you have a friend that is a publicist or into marketing, or if you hire someone, I think it definitely worth it for sure.
All right. Is there any other topics you guys want to bring up? We're actually coming up on our hour right now.
Axel, can I ask you, is Coffin Hop live streaming the Bloody Offensive event this Valentine's Day?
We hadn't really talked about it yet. We tried to do that with our Christmas launch, and we had a few little technical glitches that we were trying to iron out. It's possible we may try and save that for our big launch event in April, because we're going to be in a much bigger space and have a little more time to iron things out. But I got some nice new hardware. The boss brought me a new computer today, so we'll see if we can figure it out with that.
Yeah. Okay. So then if you happen to be in the Calgary area, Valentine's Day coming up, Bloody Offensive, 6 female writers writing stuff that they can't just read anywhere.
Which
is pretty much all of Sarah Johnson's stuff. So
that's right.
Now, thank you guys for hanging out with us, for sharing information about your books and about your publishing company. We'll be sharing the links below in the description so that our viewers can find you and your works online. And for the viewers out there, we will be back next week with more authors to introduce you to. Once again, thank you, Jason, for hanging out with me as my co-host. And Axel and Jim, you guys have been wonderful.
Thanks for having us on. You want me to play you out, do a little Spilling Ink plug?
Hell yes, I do. Let's do it.
All right. Let's do, see. You're watching Spilling Ink.
Yes. Very nice.
That's awesome.